Marvellous, or as we like to say.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Yay! And the Midweek Drive, as we said, usual range of wonderful talent. And not leaving you, of course, Cameron Tilbury, because we know, we always like to know, what is the weather like in Nashville today?
Where? It's about 95 degrees out, a little bit on the humid side, but there's a bit of a breeze, so it makes it almost tolerable as you make your way from one air-conditioned spot to another air-conditioned spot.
You could, of course, step outside, yep, which is genuinely air-conditioned, but don't let me go there. Patricia, you may have thought, oh, they've got another American on phone, and yeah, we do, actually. So, Patricia, whereabouts in the States are you from?
I'm from Texas, and the weather is the reason I like England.
There you have it, Cameron.
Now, where in Texas are you from?
Most recently, I lived in Dallas. My parents are from a very small town near Houston.
What small town would that be? Mm.
It's called Lamarck. It's next to Texas City.
Okay.
Between Houston and Galveston. It's small.
My wife, Jolia, is from Cuero, which is a real small town about 100 miles south of Austin, and it's kind of halfway between Houston and San Antonio.
Ah.
You do realize that's the reason, Patricia, we invited you on the show tonight.
To talk about the weather in Texas, which is really rainy right now. They're flooding again.
Yeah. We like to keep it local. That's the important thing. Ricky Ashford, last we met a couple of weeks ago, you were getting a photo shoot done with your Lamborghini just outside this very building.
That's right, yes. It was amazing. It was a really, really nice warm day. Probably one of the warmest days we've had this year so far.
And this Lamborghini, which I thought you were going to marry, actually, because you care so much about it. No, it is.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Oh,
please. But it has been the pinnacle of really your stunt career and all sorts of other
things. Yes, it's something that since the age of 17 I have always wanted. And as I mentioned to you, as we progress in life, there are other things come up and there are other things that are more important. So Lamborghini takes a back seat. It sits there on the back burner.
Doesn't have a back seat, Ricky.
Doesn't have a back seat. Very true. You noticed. I was just checking there, Alex, just to see if
none
you
of these drivers
just
there.
To see if you were observant. And you certainly passed your observancy you. Test there. So, yes, it was a car that I've always aspired to owning. And I decided to just commit myself last year and purchase one.
And fantastic.
Boy, I think so.
Crashed it 16 times, rolled it 5 times, blown it up 3 times, gone into the water.
He's a serious driver.
Those are sturdy.
He's a stuntman. Exactly. This is what stuntmen do with their cars.
Not this one, I think.
I'll try not to do any of that. Hopefully.
Definitely. We'll find out more about Ricky Ash and indeed have confidence and a whole heap of other goodies as the show proceeds. But starting off, as ever, Cameron, with a musical choice from Cage and Fox. Which could be Cajun Fox,
yeah,
as in various other things, with Todd Taylor. Over to you, Cameron.
Yeah, Gibson Cage from the band is a good friend of mine, and he has this band, Cajun Fox. And really cool southern rock sound. If you like that, you're going to love this album. They teamed up with Todd Taylor, who's a Guinness World Book of Records fastest banjo player. And they've got this really cool sound because Fox brings kind of a metal sound, Todd Taylor brings that banjo sound, and Gibson Cage has the country southern rock sound. So really cool sound of them. We interviewed them for Young Country TV here during CMA Music Fest last week and had a blast with them. You probably saw a picture of us with all wearing sunglasses. I figured, band's got sunglasses, I'm wearing sunglasses, so we did that. I hope you really like this song. This is Cage and Fox with Todd Taylor on Siren FM.
Raw, I felt. But in the words of MapleStar Music and Media, they're good friends of ours, and Cameron Tilbury interviewed them during CMA Music Festival for Young Country TV. They're Cage and Fox, FOCX, with Todd Taylor, and today they are being featured on the Live from Nashville segment on Siren 107.3 FM in Lincoln, England. Well, that would be us then, as opposed to Nebraska. So, Cameron, you know what we need to do now? We need to go to the Assemble team and find out what they thought about it. Now, bear in mind that Sam Stone is an ace steampunk author and has produced all sorts of things from the point of view of zombies at Tiffany's and heaps of other goodies. Sam, your thoughts on Cajun Fox?
Oh, I thought he had a gorgeous voice, especially when he opened up and went a bit higher. I preferred the higher notes to the lower notes, to be honest, but it was really good.
David Howe?
I thought the song, what I liked about it, as I mentioned while it was playing, I love the guitar bass backing. It was absolutely brilliant. And I also love the way that the song started, just the way that it gets straight into it. I love that kind of initial kind of climax at the beginning, if that makes sense.
Ricky Ash.
I really enjoyed that song. Yes, very relaxing to sit back and listen to. And very, very, I'd like to hear more.
Would you play it in your Lamborghini?
I would, yes.
Because, I mean, you do have very strong views, and it's important to listen to these, Cameron. We'll start off the show as me to go on the midweek drive.
It would probably be quite noisy with the engine.
And but you did say that anybody who drives a Lamborghini without the top being...
Well, any car. Yes, I have very, very strong
views.
They
should be specifically arrested and the car taken away from them.
My rule is if you're driving a convertible and it's a nice day and you don't have the roof down... and you don't have a medical reason for not having the roof down, then you receive a warning, and if you are caught a second time, then your car is removed, and then that car is given to the person at the top of the list, I would definitely have that roof down on that car if I owned it, because I look at people driving around in these convertibles with the roof up in the nice weather, and as you know, we very rarely get any nice weather in this country. But saying that, my roof has never been up on my Lamborghini unless it's parked. It's
fantastic. So that's www. I would definitely have the roof up on my Lamborghini.com is where you can find the list to register. So.
Yes. Thank you, David. We'll move on now. Patricia, after that little divertissement, your views on Cajun Fox.
That would be a very good top-down song. You know, just very mellow, easy driving. I can see that I need like a iced tea and some barbecue.
Driving through the Lincolnshire rain. Because you like English weather.
Exactly. Just very fantastic. Green.
I don't know why Cameron ever left Peterborough, to be honest, but there we are.
I did. Trust me, I did.
Okay. Cameron Tilbury, I think it's thumbs up, certainly from that point of view. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have.
And will you be back with us next week?
Hopefully
the telephone line will be a lot better, because it sounds as though you've actually got a piece of wire stuck in a very unfortunate place, but never mind. That's all technology for you. Cameron Tilbury will return.
Notes from a Very Small Island can only mean it's time for our top Jersey correspondent, Anna Maria Lewis, on the Midweek Drive.
So that would be you then, Anna. What's life like in Jersey as you continue your one-woman escape mission to actually get off the island?
Well, I'll tell you what the latest news is, and it's an absolute tragedy. Next to where I am, a pair of seagulls have nested on the roof. Now, I don't know if you have a seagull problem in Lincoln, I doubt it, but I'll tell you what, these seagulls actually attack you when they've nested, and they're very nasty and very aggressive. So I've had to actually try and drop a note to my next-door neighbour's letterbox to let them know about the seagull nesting on the roof, but I couldn't get near the letterbox.
It's like Daphne du Maurier all over again. They're just wild and crazy.
It's not just Daphne du Maurier, it's Alfred Hitchcock as well.
Oh,
so if you blend the two, you've got the perfect combination for life in Jersey right now.
It's the sort of thing that would make Lucy Roberts, a former Midweek driver, say...
Well, it's not every day you get to see a lecturer set on fire, so that was quite fun.
Yeah, remember that. she's working in London now, but, you know, in her own inimitable way.
Well, it's not every day you get to see a lecturer set on fire, so that was quite fun.
Yeah. That's what I call sort of student feedback in a whole new routine. It's the last time I saw Ricky Ash, but he's in the studio today, Anna, together with Sam Stone and David Howe and the wonderful Patricia Ash from Texas via Nottingham, or Nottingham via Texas, one of those two things. Is it Nottingham, Patricia?
Yeah, it is.
And David had a question for you, which proves he can remember the last time he spoke to you.
It's absolutely extraordinary, Anna. Yeah, I'm afraid I have a memory of an elephant. We came into the studio today, and I was saying to Sam in the car, oh, I can't wait to get in the studio. Oh, she's like, why you look at this?
And we
came into the studio, and I was fully expecting to see those Jersey delicacies that you promised us.
Oh,
the last
gosh,
time
I feel
we were
so
on.
Guilty. Well, I will send them to you, but they only bake them on a Friday.
If
I shove them in a box on Friday, you should get them by Monday, Tuesday, and then we can talk about it on Wednesday. No worries. This time you will get it.
Synchronise that with the stone tapes is going to be always going to be a nightmare from that point of view. Ricky, many people are surprised when I say that you did double for Fiona Bruce for the BBC.
That is correct.
Because
yes.
I think surely she reads the news herself, and she's not a well, action girl.
there are those odd occasions when she can't make it to read the news, and she'll check my availability. Mm. But yes, I am Fiona Bruce's stunt double.
Indeed.
And I doubled Fiona to put an MGB GT sports car through a brick wall outside Charlton House in London.
Sorted.
On the BBC HD commercial, which was when the BBC launched the new HD channel, they performed a spoof of the Antiques Roadshow where you had Eric Knowles valuing a vase, and the vase goes up in the air and lots of people try and save the vase, and Fiona saves the day by crashing the car through
the wall.
She gets out of the car, which explodes, and she dives and saves the vase. So it was an absolute pleasure to double Fiona Bruce, because in my career, in 2000, I made it into the Guinness Book of Records as the world's most versatile stuntman.
I think we deserve a round of applause for that.
Thank you. And
the world's most versatile stuntman.
Yes, I've doubled every height from 3'6" right through to 6'4", and an age range of 6 right through to 90.
Ricky, wow. I've got to ask you this. I know we've known each other for a number of years, but the 6'4" one, did you wear stilts?
No, the 6'4" one was driving a car. I've doubled people like Griff Rhys-Jones, who's 6 foot tall. That was to jump off a building. Doubled Stephen K. Amos, and that was driving as well. So
you were very nearly doubling David Howe, actually, for the stunt tapes. We had you signed up as a possible sort of...
Absolutely. I mean, just let me know when you want me to put the fire out.
It's
burning quite nicely there at the moment, so it's getting a bit warm. So,
Sensational. So, Anna, if you ever want to have a stunt person who knows what he's doing when it comes to high-performance cars and vehicles, and indeed all the rest of the pieces, Ricky is your man.
It's amazing, because we've got these people who do own fast cars in Jersey who don't stunt smash
They're
them.
Called millionaires, Anna.
They are. They're complete and utter beaks.
I think Anna's one of them, really.
But we're talking about red Ferraris that cost Testa Rossas that cost an arm and a leg plus a bit more, and they wrap them round lampposts near where I live. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It upsets the seagulls. It's like an ecological disaster.
The seagulls and your stunt. Well, you know, I'll have to find out if they want a stunt person in Jersey for some of the building works that go. Maybe they want someone to abseil down one of the large buildings here when they're finally completed.
Or indeed a motivational speaker, because he does motivational
speaking. Yes, I do. I travel around the world trying to make people more positive about
Never
life.
Never let it be said, we don't raise these things. We'll raise it with our Los Angeles correspondents as well. Still to come on the show today, we'll be speaking to Professor Callum Roberts, Professor of Marine Conservation at the University of York, talking about humanity's relationship with the oceans. Tara Bennett will be back with us. Yay! The US editor for SFX magazine, and Graham Harvey will be up with us shortly after 6 o'clock, followed by Arthur Weingarten, Emma Tinson, and Phil Leonis. So there we are, Anna. Lots of things to do. By the way, where is your location in Jersey today, apart from just by the seagulls?
I'm not actually. Today I'm in an area near where the Battle of Jersey took place in 1781. The battle was really quite epic in Jersey history, but it only lasted 15 minutes.
It's a winner for Jersey. It's a small island.
By English standards, it's a tiddly battle, really. But yeah, a few people died. You know, the sort of thing.
Compared to Waterloo, obviously, you know, size isn't everything. We're just celebrating a bicentenary of that anyway. Tomorrow.
Well, strangely enough, they do that here on the 6th of January, 1781, and every 100 years after that, they've done it here. They have a sort of a reenactment of the French invasion of Jersey by nasty old Baron de Roucourt, who's buried just by the exit of the town church, which is about 2 minutes away from here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Lincoln's got some amazing historical areas where...
Oh, I think we can rustle up one or two.
One or two, yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, life continues. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed, thank you.
We haven't even had a chance to say hello for Patricia.
Hi.
There you go.
More of that in a matter of moments. Will you return next week?
Yes, of course I shall.
Splendid.
Speak to you soon. Bye for now.
A Sea of Hope or Despair. A presentation by Professor Callum Roberts, Professor of Marine Conservation at the University of York, coming to the Darlington Civic Theatre, at least rather the Central Hall Dolphin Centre, on Friday the 19th of June. We're delighted to be able to welcome to the programme and making his debut on the Midweek Drive, the aforementioned Professor Callum Roberts. Callum, good evening. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good evening to you.
Excellent. We have four fabulous folk in the studio, and we'll be asking them to put several questions to you as the thing proceeds. That would be David Howe, Sam Stone, Patricia Ash, and Ricky Ash. Interesting connection there, but obviously no relation. Callum, if we can turn to you first and foremost, because clearly we came from the sea, we emerged from the sea, we have an intimate relation with the sea and so on. You've obviously sort of been very much a key aspect of marine conservation. Is the prognosis good? Is it bad? Is it indifferent? Are we heading to joy and wonderment, or is the case of really we're at the 11th hour?
Well, it's a bit of bad set of choices to offer. I think we are reaching a point where we can have a major impact on the oceans, which is irreversible on human timescales. So I suppose you could say we're at the 11th hour. We've urgently got to do something about the rising scale of human influence on the sea and increase its resilience, you know, enable the oceans to cope with the difficult times which lie ahead as a result of the growth of human pressures like climate change.
In terms of recent news, we hear that the Pope is putting together a kind of major encyclical on the sort of issues relating to the environment and lines from that. Talk us through your own interests. I mean, from the point of view of your research interests in the 1990s, from behaviourism right the way through to how coral reefs are deteriorating significantly.
Well, when I started out studying the marine environment, I was interested in ecology, and the behavior of fish species really appealed to me. So I studied that for my PhD, and I was lucky enough to do it on coral reefs of the Red Sea. And these are some of the most magnificent marine ecosystems on the planet, and I fell in love with them immediately. But over a period of decades, those coral reefs gradually began to deteriorate in front of my eyes and indeed in front of the watching world of scientists and tourists who go to enjoy them. They literally seem to be falling apart. And it turns out the coral reefs are one of the most vulnerable of marine environments to damage from human influences. And it's damage from things like overfishing, but also changes in the global system, such as the movement of animals and diseases and so on from place to place. So in the Caribbean, for example, we've seen the loss of more than 90% of the major reef-building corals there in the last 20 years, and that's as a result of disease epidemics. And those disease epidemics have a link to people. One of them was caused, we believe, by a human gut bacterium that was probably introduced in sewage. Other diseases may have been introduced through the Panama Canal from the Pacific by shipping. So we are having an influence which is unprecedented in the sea. which is going in the wrong direction. So we're seeing a lot of degradation in many different habitats across the world right now.
You've worked, of course, on a United States National Research Council Committee on Marine Protected Areas. You've been a member of the Marine Reserves Working Group. Just bring in Ricky Ash here, who's, again, you travel around, Ricky, do a whole range of things. Ricky, your thoughts on what you've just been listening to?
Well, it's really, really interesting when you hear these things. The thing that I hear so much about all these things that are happening around the planet, and I have incredibly radical views on this.
That's why I thought I'd bring you into this.
And the number one thing that nobody wants to admit is what's causing all of these things, what's causing climate change, what's causing the problem with the coral, is overpopulation of our planet. And that is the number one problem that people do not want to admit.
Does that resonate with yourself at all, Callum?
Well, that's the subject of my next book, is the effects of increasing human population. It's certainly the root cause of all these problems that we see around us. I think you could say that the dimensions of global change are coming from increasing population and our increasing energy demand through our increasing technological capacity, so the control that we're able to exert over the planetary system, and through globalization. So the increasing connectedness of the world is causing an enormous amount of change as well.
Back in 2001, you were awarded a Hardy Fellowship in Conservation Biology at Harvard University, so it's good to connect with it from that point of view. Patricia, let's bring yourself into this. I mean, somebody who's moved over from the States, where sometimes, and again, you might want to contradict this, but sometimes one gets the feeling that not everybody in the States believes even in the sense that there's any pollution at all, really.
Yeah.
I mean, any thoughts from your own point of view in terms of what Callum's working within in terms of the sea and marine conservation and so on?
Well, marine biology is a little bit sort of a hobby of an interest, anyway, of mine. I was wondering, what about invasive species? What are they doing to coral?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. And certainly in the Caribbean, we're seeing an amazing invasion unfolding in the last 20 years or so. In fact, it started in 1992 with the introduction of Indo-Pacific lionfish to Caribbean reefs. And these are very beautiful predators. They're not especially common on reefs in the Pacific or Indian Oceans. But they've become very abundant and invasive in the Caribbean, and they're literally munching their way through huge quantities of juvenile fish there, which have no experience of lionfish, and they're very naive. They basically allow themselves to be slurped up. So that's just one little invasion which we're seeing. And I mentioned that globalization is causing a lot of change. Well, one big aspect of globalization is the movement of things from place to place. And what we see is that the amount of invasions is rising in step with the economic activity and the shipping that goes alongside that. So all of this, the goods that are being shipped from Asia to the rest of the world, is taking with it all sorts of marine species as invasives and potential problems. So this is a wild card, really, in the way that ecosystems are going to change as a result of human influence. We can predict some of the likely species arrivals in places based on increases in temperature. So as the world warms, you expect to see things from lower latitudes moving north and south towards the polar regions. So there's a predictability there. But the wild card is we don't know when one day something from, let's say, Tasmania will show up in the English Channel and could start to cause a lot of problems.
Sam, are you worried about future generations and ecosystems, seeing this century as maybe, I don't know, one of humanity's last centuries?
Yes, I thought about this long and hard, actually, and I've heard about the coral reef problem many times over the last few years. It's obviously not something that's happened overnight, and I'm just wondering, Callum, what your view on a future cure would be. I know that this isn't going to be easily solvable, but any thoughts on that?
Well, we've got to deal with the climate drivers that humanity is promoting. And so greenhouse gas emissions will have to be brought under control if we're going to curtail rises in ocean temperature. And incidentally, the oceans have absorbed something like 90% of the extra heat added to this planet as a result of greenhouse gas emissions. So they've kept the above water part of the world habitable. If they hadn't absorbed that heat, we'd be in real trouble above water right now. But that's causing warming in the sea. It's causing change, which is impacting on coral reefs. Coral reefs like it warm, but they don't like it really hot. And so the extra temperature rise is causing mass die-off. And then carbon dioxide emissions are dissolving in the oceans, causing an increase in acidity because they create carbonic acid when carbon dioxide dissolves. So if those two pressures are not dealt with by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, then any other sort of action we can take will not be very effective. But in the meantime, it's going to take time to get political will to bring those things under control. In the meantime, what we've got to do is to give marine life the best chance of seeing through the difficult times ahead. And I think what we need to do to achieve that is to protect a lot more, to fish less, to avoid using destructive methods in fishing, and to pollute less, so that we're alleviating the pressures that we can on the oceans in order to give the marine life the capacity to deal with the pressures that we're more slow at dealing with.
Is there something which nationally we still have people, and I'm not mentioning any countries here, but there are lots of thoughts about emerging nations, etc., who will refuse to acknowledge that there is an issue, and therefore, politically, this is a very difficult thing to begin to address?
Well, it is difficult, but I think even in countries like the United States, where there's been a great deal of political skepticism about climate change, the reality of climate change is being accepted at lower levels. So there are many cities around the United States that are taking action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to shift to renewable sources of energy. There are many actions that are being taken at state level to address the problem. So I don't think all is lost. I think we are seeing a move as well. I mean, there's acknowledgement at the recent G7 summit that we're going to have to wean ourselves off fossil fuels in the coming century. So I think that there's an agreement that we need to do something, and that agreement now has to be translated into action. It's taken a long while for us to get here, but I think the body of evidence that we need to tackle it is now so overwhelmingly large that not doing so will be an enormous disservice to the population alive today and to future generations.
I can tell, Callum, that actually being at Future Oceans, a sea of hope or despair, at the Central Hall Dolphin Centre on Friday the 19th of June is absolutely a must attend in so many ways. Will you be actually bringing it around to other places? I mean, dare we hope for you in Lincoln or indeed in other parts of the world? Will you be on tour with this particular piece?
I have been on tour for the last few weeks, mm-hmm. and so I've spoken in Stamford actually already and in Southampton. So Darlington's the next stop, then to Brecon in Wales and Keswick, and finally to the festival in North Norfolk.
Always good to do the festival at North Norfolk. It's great stuff there. Of course, you can go online and find out all sorts
Kings
of things.
That's what I meant.
Exactly. All sorts of way through it. I have to say, I did love the thing in the press release which suggested that your lifelong love of coral reefs effectively dispelled your prior notion that marine science was all about freezing on the deck of a North Sea trawler knee-deep in fish. How often I've used that as a metaphor for this very show, Callum. It's amazing. Never mind. Life continues. Callum, it's been fabulous touching base with a good self. Is there a web address that you have that you could point people to actually find out more, or indeed find out more about the text and books and so on, with respect to, obviously, marine conservation and biology?
Well, I think if you just Google my name, you'll find that very easily.
Indeed.
And there's lots of information about the book there.
Precisely. Other search engines are available, but what the hey. Callum, two final questions for your good self. Well, actually three. The first one is, musically speaking, would you like to go out with the classic Yellow Submarine, as in we are all in a yellow submarine, or Julian Lennon and Saltwater? Tough choice, but...
I think the classic Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, I would. I know your students would be pleased to actually get him shouting at the University of York at this moment. moment. And the next question is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
So a round of applause, please, for Professor Callum Roberts at the University of York. Yes, I know, University of York, another university as opposed to the University of Lincoln. They are available. No, we work collaboratively. It's wonderful stuff. And Callum, can we prevail upon your good self to join us again in the not-too-distant future?
Of course, yes.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea.